What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another edition of the Goat Talk with Marcus, powered by Poddex and fueled by Goat Fuel. Joining me on the show today is Peyton Doyle of the Peyton Doyle Show. What's up, man? How you doing?
I'm doing great, man. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for coming on. Also, welcome back. I know you've been a while for just about a year.
I was missing in action there for a little bit.
Yeah, it's nice to have you back in the game and being active. And also here on the show to talk basketball. So, as y'all know, NBA playoffs are fastly approaching. Of all the series to end in four games, I don't think anyone thought that this one was going to be the one to end in four. But the Boston Celtics, led by Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, got the job done against KD and Kyrie of the Brooklyn Nets. Four games. All four games were very close. I guess let's just jump right in with the obvious question. Did you expect the Celtics to sweep Nets? And like, what was your reaction as the series was progressing, then ultimately when they completed the sweep the other night?
I absolutely positively did not expect this to be a sweep. I don't know who could honestly say that they did expect this to be the sweep unless you're like a diehard Celtics fan. But clearly, Ime Udoka has got this team to buy into this brand of basketball that is tough and physical and hard-nosed. They've become the Miami Heat, but with an actual star in Jason Tatum. And yeah, as this series was progressing, I remember after game one, I was like, and I went on my show on Wednesday and I was like, oh my gosh, I can't wait to have seven games of this series. I'm taking Brooklyn in seven. And I said, and I was completely wrong. I will sit here and I admit I was completely wrong. I couldn't have been more wrong on this. I said that I thought that Boston's physical play was going to be so hard to repeat when having to contain Kyrie and Kevin Durant both, that I thought they were going to wear themselves out as the series went on. But not only did they not wear themselves out, it seemed like Boston or Brooklyn was the team that got worn out. And Boston got more energetic and more energized as the series progressed. And it was like a huge domino effect, because not only did you have Boston playing their swarming defense and Jason Tatum going off on the offensive end, you also had this saga with Ben Simmons going on off the court. Was he going to play there? And then and now there's the question surrounding Steve Nash. Is he a good coach? Does Kyrie and Kevin Durant want him there? There was a lot of drama there with Brooklyn off the court as well as not as their mediocre play on the court. So all of that accumulated to this sweep, this surprise sweep by the Boston Celtics in the first round.
I had the Brooklyn Nets winning in 7-2. And I spent most of my time before the series saying that if you look back at what happened with Brooklyn last season, with KD basically carrying this team to the Eastern Conference semis and almost to the Eastern Conference finals without James Harden, without a healthy Kyrie. Like, now that Kyrie's back, James Harden's gone. That's obviously going to suck. But at least with Kyrie there, that this is a basketball team that could make it out of the first round of the playoffs. Like, this was, I thought, bar none, the best team of all the play-in teams. Look at Brooklyn, Cleveland, Atlanta, Charlotte in the Eastern Conference, and you had, you know, the Clippers and the Timberwolves and the Pelicans and the Spurs in the West. Like, this was clearly the best team of the play-in, and they didn't look like it. Like, so far, of the four teams that made it to the play-in, the Timberwolves have looked better through the course of their series. The Hawks have looked better through the course of their series. The Pelicans have looked better through the course of their series against the Suns. Like, this is really, really bad. They were the worst team so far through the course of the playoffs in clutch possessions, as far as like all four games, the last 5 minutes when the score was within 5 points. They only scored 10 points in those situations. That's the worst in the playoffs. They had an offensive rating of 58.8. They had a net rating of negative 60.2. They shot 31% from the field as a team, not a single assist, and they were outscored by 15 points in the clutch. Like, that's really, really bad for a team that boasts who many people were saying was the most skilled duo of all time. Like, that's really, 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 really bad. I said a couple weeks ago, and I'll say it again, like, this series after game one, even though I still had hope, it just, that game one collapse at the end just really felt like the 2018 finals with the Cavs and the Warriors, where, you know, JR dribbles the clock out and then the Warriors ultimately end up going to win that series. And then we know how that happens. They end up sweeping the Cavs in four. Now, those games were a lot less competitive down the stretch in each of those four games than this one was. But like that game-winning shot in game one really set the tone and really was like the momentum breaker. Like, clearly KD is one of the best players on the planet, one of the best players to ever step foot on a basketball court. And obviously Kyrie Irving is box office, but like Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown really stepped up in those fourth quarters in all four of these games when it really, really mattered. Like, to the point where you really, they didn't look like they were young. Like, both of these guys are still young. Like, both of these guys are still young. And I think that's what's even more crazy about this is a basketball team that flipped the switch when they really needed to. And they've been one of the better teams in the NBA since after the All-Star break, I think they won 26 of their 32 games to close out. And this was really, really, really good. This was a clinic defensively for a young basketball team. Obviously, you have the Defensive Player of the Year, the guy who probably would have won Defensive Player of the Year if he didn't get hurt, in Robert Williams. And then obviously two very solid wings in Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. Speaking of which, we talked about, I think it was Tracy McGrady, who said that, or I don't remember who, but someone said that Jason Tatum may be passing Kevin Durant in the NBA's hierarchy. Like, I don't know if I'd go that far, because I still think that KD's a top five player in the league, but where does Jason Tatum rank among the top players in the NBA? Like, if you had to rank Jason Tatum based on what we've seen now through these first four games of the playoffs form, Jason Tatum, where is he? 15, 10? Where are you ranking Jason Tatum among the top players in the NBA?
It's hard to rank the top players in the NBA because you have to – it's almost like, do you take age into account here? Because if I'm ranking him against people in his own age range, right, I'm taking him above Luka. The only person who I'm really definitively not taking him above is Giannis. But – other than that, because of his ability to play both ends of the ball, and not only is he extremely great offensively, he still has room to be better offensively, which is kind of scary to think about in a way. Yeah. And now that he's added this defensive side to his game, which is incredible, I think that puts him above he's above everyone in the conversation except for Giannis. Now, the whole KD thing, not yet, because I get it, but KD's still a two-time finals MVP. At the end of the day, he's proven himself, but Jason Tatum did raise those questions. Is he the next guy after like these KD leaves and Steph leaves and LeBron leaves? I think Jason Tatum has put himself in a position to be one of those top-notch, top three guys in the league, which is something I didn't think of him coming into the league. I didn't think he had that in him, but he's proving that he clearly does.
I mean, let's just face it, when you outclass one of the best players on the planet in a four-game series, like he played 42 minutes, averaging, we'll round up, averaged 37-5, shooting 46, 42, and 88, or 87 from the field goal, three-point range, and three, he looked better than Kevin Durant offensively. He looked better than Kevin Durant defensively. He looked better than Kyrie Irving offensively and defensively. Like, he was clearly the best player on the court on all four games. And it wasn't even close. Like, and it didn't really matter what the situation was. I was, you know, as you watch these series, sometimes you always kind of wait and see who's going to take that next step. Because as we know in playoff basketball, each possession means a lot more and the games kind of slow down. But like, the fourth quarter came and regardless of what he did in the first 36 minutes, he just flipped that switch and turned into a completely different guy and really was like, there's no way my team's not losing this basketball game. And that's the killer mentality that I think he's continued to grow and develop and mature with as his career has gone on. Jason Tatum, I think, is no doubt a top 10 player in the league at this point. I don't know how you can debate that. Like, if he's outside the top 10, then I think you're just really, really, really splitting hairs. But I'm hard pressed for you to name 10 guys definitively based on what we've seen so far through four games in a playoff series against one of the best players in the world and against another guy who's really, really good as well in Kyrie Irving. Like, it's hard for you to tell me that there is 10 guys that could have done what Jason Tatum just did against the Brooklyn Nets. Now I get it, right? There was a lack of chemistry, and you can say that the coach wasn't that great, and obviously Ben Simmons wasn't there. But at its core, Jason Tatum showed up, and he played basketball, and he did what he needed to do. And you know, we can't take credit away from Jaylen Brown and Marcus Smart either. So you look at Jason Tatum, you look at Jaylen Brown. These are still young guys, right? There are a lot of solid duos in the league, right? You've got You got your Chris Middletons and your Giannis Antetokounmpos. You've got your DeMar DeRozan and your Zach LaVines, I guess you want to say that. You've got your Bams and your Jimmy Butlers, your Hardens and your Embiids. Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, after this series, where are they as a collective, as a duo, as one of the better duos in the NBA? Where would you rank those guys?
Top five. I mean, there was question marks at the beginning of the year because the Celtics were struggling. Can they play together, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely they can. They're proving it. They clearly can. There's that question has been buried, not 6 feet under, 60 feet under. It's done. Yeah. It's over. They clearly can play together. They clearly all have chemistry. No, they shouldn't blow it up. This is a team that has a legitimate chance to contend for a title this season. Why? Because they've all bought into this style of play together. They're well coached. They're deep. They play great defense, and they have the ability to score offensively. What more could you want from a team? And not only do they have the ability to score offensively, they have a top 10 player in the NBA. Yeah. They have a superstar as well on top of that. So that duo between Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, they're going to put themselves, they're going to start climbing the ladder. Okay, you just beat KD and Kyrie. Now you're going to keep climbing the ladder as long as this playoff run goes. And I think they're going to cement themselves as top five.
Going into the playoffs, I was really hesitant on the Celtics. Just for the simple fact that while they were on that run towards the end of the season, we see that sometimes, right, where teams kind of get hot towards the end of the playoffs and it all kind of just goes away. And like I said, the Nets, despite, you know, Kyrie not being in the lineup because of the vaccine and all this other stuff, and James Harden ultimately leaving to go to Brooklyn and or Philly, and KD missing a large portion of the season, like, these are still two really solid, really reliable, bona fide guys in playoffs. But again, these two young dudes really just, like, put on a clinic on both sides of the ball. When you think about some of the greatest championship teams and some of the greatest championship contending teams of all time, a lot of those teams have really solid two-way wings, right? The Boston Celtics have two. and that's the beauty of it. They've got Jason Tatum, who's clearly the guy on this team, and they've got Jaylen Brown, who is clearly the second string, but he also has the talent where he can be the guy that leads your team in one of these situations. And that's what makes this team really dangerous, because a lot of these other duos around the league, it's fairly like, this is guy one and this is guy two. But as Justin would say, the Celtics have a 1A, 1B scenario, mm-hmm. where if Jason Tatum's off, Jaylen Brown can just as easily fill that void. Or if Jaylen Brown's off, Jason Tatum could just as easily fill that void. But if they're both on at the same time, this team is really, really hard to beat. And it's going to take that opposing duo, whoever that is, to outclass them. And the Nets just struggle to do that on a consistent basis. Like, absolutely, Kevin Durant was averaging 26 points this series, and I think Kyrie was averaging somewhere around like 24, 25. But both of those guys were averaging about 10 free throws a game or something like that. Like, you take those free throws away, we're talking about KD averaging like 15, 16 points a game this series, and Kyrie is kind of somewhere down there as well. Like, this was really, really, really good basketball. Like you said, they've got a shot to, assuming the Bucks get the job done, which I think they will, they've got a shot to go up against the defending champions in the second round, and they could possibly get past them, especially with Chris Middleton being out for much of that series possibly. Then you're talking about whether it's Bam Adebayo and Jimmy Butler in Miami, or whether it's James Harden and Joel Embiid in Philly. The Celtics can get past three elite duos in the NBA before even making it to the NBA Finals and having to potentially see Chris Paul and Devin Booker, or even Klay and Steph Curry, who is another elite. Like, we're talking about a chance to really cement themselves as legitimate threats. Like, the Celtics have always kind of been the bridesmaids of the Eastern Conference over the past couple of years, because they've always gotten really close and haven't been able to get there. And now it seems like everything's starting to come together. You mentioned earlier how they didn't know if they could mesh. We got to remember, Marcus Smart, who is their best facilitator, granted he is a defensive player of the year, but he's their best facilitator. He missed a lot of that time when they were kind of struggling. He's their facilitator. Jason Tatum's not a facilitator. Neither is Jaylen Brown, but they got it together, and it works. And it was a clinic. Like, I've been saying that the whole show, but it was really a clinic of basketball on both ends of the floor. Absolutely. Right now, we talked about the victors. We have to talk about the losers. We'll start with KD on this one and then go to Kyrie. You mentioned earlier, KD is a two-time Finals MVP. He's obviously a two-time champ with the Golden State Warriors, a former scoring champion, former MVP. Like he is, like I said, one of the greatest players of all time. Does this series being swept by the Boston Celtics in the first round of the Eastern Conference playoffs, does that hinder Kevin Durant's legacy as all? Does that take away from what KD has done at this point in his career and where he is right now? Where are you on KD's legacy? Because, you know, you got the Charles Barkleys and the other guys they like to talk about legacy all the time. So let's talk about legacy. What are we looking at with KD's legacy at this point?
It all depends on what you thought of KD before this series. Personally, I viewed KD as an extremely talented player, but never had the ability to rise to the occasion, put the team on his back and push them through tough series, or if they had a bunch of injuries, fight through the adversities of injuries and tough matchups, right? So Kevin Durant is the guy that's always going to do what he does. He scored, 26 a game in the series. He played all right, but he didn't rise to the occasion. He didn't put the team on his back like everyone expects from, the greats of the greats. So overall, do I think it affects his legacy? Not necessarily, because he already wasn't in the Michael Jordan, LeBron discussion anyways. So he's going to be remembered as the guy who was kind of shadowed in LeBron James's shadow during LeBron's prime and was super talented and a great player, one of the best ever, but not one of the best ever.
It's tough for KD. I think when you talk about guys being all-time great, obviously the thing is, well, all-time greats don't get swept. Well, that's not entirely true, right? Because Michael Jordan, he got swept twice. I think it was year two and year three of his career. They were both in the first round of his playoffs. We've seen LeBron James also being swept twice, both in the finals. And both times, he was clearly outmatched by the other team. Like in 2007, the Cleveland Cavaliers had no business being in the finals. And 11 years later in 2018, they also really had no business being in the finals that year either, because there wasn't really anybody on that team outside of LeBron James. You look at Kobe Bryant, he was swept three times in his career in 2011. In the Western Conference semis, another time before in the Western Conference semis, and then again in the Western Conference finals. I can't remember the years though. So it's not abnormal for a guy to be all-time great to get swept. The interesting thing about Kevin Durant, and the thing I keep seeing, is Kevin Durant still has to prove that he can be the guy on his own team. And a lot of this has to fall on Kevin Durant as far as not just this series, but the totality of his span in Brooklyn. Let's take a look at the 3 years he spent outside of Golden State in Brooklyn. We have to remember the very first season, he missed the entire season because of his Achilles injury. He didn't play. Last season, as I mentioned earlier, he made it to the Eastern Conference semifinals with this basketball team without a healthy James Harden, without a healthy Kyrie Irving. And as we all talked about last season, if his foot was just a couple inches shorter, he probably would have made it to and maybe even won the NBA Finals, or at least made it to the NBA Finals, because I don't think the Hawks would have beaten the Nets in the Eastern Conference Finals last season. Absolutely not. So that now you look at this season. Okay, Kyrie did what he did with the vaccine. We'll talk about Kyrie in a second. Okay, James Harden ends up putting the fat suit back on and getting his way out of Brooklyn. He ends up in Philadelphia. But we have to remember that Kevin Durant missed a large chunk of the season as well due to injury. And also the guy that the Nets traded for in Ben Simmons just didn't step foot on the basketball floor. So as much as Kevin Durant played inefficiently this season or this series, and as much as Kevin Durant didn't look like the best player in the world, as many people, including myself, thought he was coming into this series, we have to remember that there are a lot of things in the totality of this season and in the totality of his time in Brooklyn that really, when you put it into perspective, you can't just completely slaughter Kevin Durant for what's happened. Obviously, the greats get it done, but Boston was just a better team. Like you look at the media and what they've done, they've made it kind of seem like the Boston Celtics are a scrub. Like they weren't the second seed in the Eastern Conference. Like they weren't 26-6 after the All-Star break. Like they weren't one of, if not the best offensive and defensive teams in the league post All-Star break. Like this isn't a bad team. Now this is a bad team and KD's putting out this. Absolutely slaughter them. Like that's unacceptable. But this is a really solid team with two really solid players, really good depth, a really good coach, who as the season progressed, you can tell he was continuing to improve as a first-year head coach and made this team what it is today, made this team potentially not just an an Eastern Conference Finals contender, but an NBA Finals contender. And they're in a really good position where, like, I don't know if there's a team where you can look at them definitively and say that the Boston Celtics can't beat them in a seven-game series. I think the only team that I look at and I maybe hesitate is the Warriors, and that's just because they have a lot of firepower. But the Celtics have the firepower too, and you can make the argument that the Celtics are the better team defensively. So, like, it's really hard for you to find a team in these playoffs that's left that you can say definitively or can beat the Boston Celtics in a seven-game series. And I think that gets lost in the sauce sometimes when we talk about all-time great players like a Kevin Durant and a Kyrie Irving. Now, Kyrie, on the other hand, he's kind of made his bed, and he's done a lot of things that he has seemingly acknowledged in his post-game presser after game four. What does Kyrie's legacy look like after this loss, after this four-game sweep to the Boston Celtics?
Again, Kyrie Irving will be remembered for hitting one of the clutchest shots in the history of the NBA in game seven of the NBA Finals against Golden State. Outside of that, extremely talented, but he's not the guy. He's not the guy. And in his post-game presser, what I thought was interesting was he was talking about him kind of being involved with management. That never works in any sport, not just the NBA, any sport. And even coaches, too, that have too much power. Like Bill Belichick, when he was given power to draft, how did the Patriots drafts look after he was given power to coach and draft? They're not looking good. They're not looking good. Players play basketball. GMs manage the team, and coaches coach. That's how the organization of a team works, whether it's in basketball, whether it's in hockey, baseball, football, or anything at all. And not only was he talking about him being involved with management, he also failed to mention the current head coach of the team in Steve Nash when he brought up all these people he's going to be working with. So this is all a complete mess. Kyrie Irving is an insanely talented and skilled basketball player, but he just isn't. He's not the team guy that everyone. He might be a great teammate, but it doesn't seem like he is a leader of the team, really. And it's weird with the whole vaccine thing, how he just never got it, and then all of a sudden he was playing, and it's impossible for a team to gel when you're only there for half the season. When you're playing every other game, it's impossible for you to, one, gel with your teammates, and two, for your team to actually get experience playing together, because injuries happen and stuff like that. So if you're not injured, you want to be on the court as much as possible to be able to gel with your team. This whole situation in Brooklyn was a mess, and it's hard to put it on any one guy, too, because at the end of the day, they're not well coached. They're not deep. They were dealing with injuries this season. Kyrie didn't want to get the vaccine, which is it's his choice at the end of the day, whether we like it or not. He has every right to not get vaccinated, but it did come at a price at the end of the day. And the price was probably contending for an NBA championship.
So you mentioned chemistry, and I just thought about this off the fly, because we see a lot of times in the playoffs, right, benches get shortened and things, different scenarios, right? You look at, for instance, in Philly, like the Nets aren't the only team that are dealing with a player that didn't get vaccinated. Matisse Thybulle is not vaccinated, and because of that, he can't play the games in Toronto, which is probably why the Toronto Raptors have won two straight games somehow after being down 3-0. If the Brooklyn Nets kept Kyrie only playing road games, and if he never played those home games down the stretch, and even in this series, if Kyrie only played in Boston and not in Brooklyn, because at this point, the Brooklyn Nets are used to not having Kyrie in Brooklyn. Do you think that makes a difference in how this series turns out? Do you think that makes a difference in the chemistry of this team, like not just specifically in home and away games, but just as a whole? Because I feel like when you insert a guy like Kyrie, no matter what the issue is, Kyrie is obviously the second best player on this team. And obviously without Kyrie, you have guys like Bruce Brown and guys like Patty Mills and Seth Curry kind of fill those voids around Kevin Durant on those home games. But now that Kyrie's back, it's like, all right, well, it's KD, Kyrie, and then everyone else. Do you think that if Brooklyn kept Kyrie out of the home games, that maybe they don't get swept, maybe that they look different, maybe this series is either still going, or maybe they make it out of the first round if they just keep Kyrie on the road? What Let's play the what if game as far as that's concerned.
Well, if we're playing that game and Kyrie's only playing road games, we're not having this conversation right now because they don't beat Cleveland, which played down to the wire. They don't beat Cleveland and Brooklyn without Kyrie, and they probably don't win the next game without Kyrie. And if they do, they're playing Miami right now, and Miami's going to kick their butt too, especially if Kyrie's only there half the time. So it's, you know, I get the chemistry thing, but it doesn't ever make sense to not want one of your best players on the floor.
Of course. So I mentioned Matisse Thybulle, and I said the other day that at some point over the course of these playoffs, I'm going to talk about my beef with sports media, because it seems like, especially in the NBA, there has to be a villain for some. I don't know why this is, but for some reason, there has to be a villain in the NBA. We think back to the decision in 2010 with LeBron James, and instantly LeBron James became the villain, and then that kind of died down, and then KD left OKC to go to Golden State, and then he became the villain. And it seems like we've been missing that villain guy. And apparently Kyrie Irving has become the villain of at least this season. And while I'm not going to say whether I think it's justified or not, because like you said, this is his decision, right? And this is a decision that the Brooklyn Nets had to live with. This is a decision that we all have to live with. I'm not going to tell another grown man what to do with his body. That's not my place. What I will say, though, is that there's two things that we have to talk about here. Number one, Kyrie Irving wasn't the only player in the NBA that didn't get vaccinated and that didn't affect playoff success potential playoff success. As I mentioned earlier, Matisse Thybulle is not vaccinated. Matisse Thybulle is the Philadelphia 76ers' best on-ball defender. Matisse Thybulle has only played in three games so far this season because he can't play in Toronto, because no one can play in Toronto if you're not unvaccinated. Those are the rules. So why are we villainizing Kyrie Irving and we're not villainizing Matisse Thybulle? Not that I think that we should be villainizing either, but like we can't do this thing where we villainize who we want. If you want to villainize somebody for the decision that they've made this season, you villainize Ben Simmons, and we'll get to that in a second. All the heat that Ben Simmons has gotten this season, he deserves, and then some. But you look at Kyrie Irving. What we can't do is we can't in one breath say, oh, Kyrie Irving is a box office attraction. Now, I love watching Kyrie Irving play, and he's one of the most skilled players ever. But then on the same flip side of that, we can't also chastise Kyrie Irving every time the Brooklyn Nets lose a game. We can't keep hanging on to this fact, because it is a fact that if Kyrie Irving is vaccinated, the Brooklyn Nets aren't the seventh seed. We know that, but we have to live in the now and in the reality. And the reality is Kyrie Irving wasn't vaccinated. The reality is James Harden said he didn't want to be in Brooklyn anymore and he left. The reality is Kevin Durant missed a chunk of the season due to the hamstring injury. So while yes, the Brooklyn Nets shouldn't have been the seventh seed, we can't just put that all on Kyrie Irving. And I don't want to make it seem like I'm completely saying that Kyrie Irving is abdicated of any wrong, because Kyrie Irving, maybe for the greater good, Kyrie Irving should have gotten the vaccination. But on the flip side of that, those are his morals and those are his values. And we can't look at Kyrie and talk down on Kyrie because he decided to stick to his values and stick to what he truly believes as a man. That's his business. With all that being said, though, again, he came to play. We can't sit here and act like he didn't come to play. Like, he played phenomenally in game one. It just wasn't enough. Did he disappear in games 2, 3, and 4? Yes. But given the situation, Kyrie Irving still showed up and played basketball based on he knew what he was getting himself into. The Brooklyn Nets knew what they were getting themselves into. And the last thing I'll say about this, and most importantly, is Kyrie Irving's not a villain. And this, for lack of a better term, this sick obsession to make Kyrie Irving a villain because of his personal beliefs really, really baffles me and really bothers me a lot. Like, you turn on First Take and you turn on Get Up and some of the other shows. Like, I saw this clip on YouTube the other day, and I posted it on my Instagram because it really bothered me. Stephen A. Smith said when Russia bombed Ukraine, he was sitting back wondering if Kyrie Irving would show up for work. Like, first of all, that's not productive. And secondly, what does that have to do with anything? Like, if Kyrie Irving don't want to show up to work, okay, like the same way if Peyton doesn't show up to work, he has consequences. The same way if I don't show up to work, I have consequences. Like, there are consequences for that. But we can't continue to harp on the past. Like, we have to focus on what's happening. And what's happening is Kyrie Irving still showed up to play basketball. Like, was he inefficient? Yes. But it's not because he was just jacking up terrible shots. It was just a good defensive basketball team. So the obsession to villainize Kyrie Irving throughout the course of this entire season is something that has really, like, been, like, let's slow down here. We all knew what we were getting ourselves into. The Nets knew what they were getting themselves into. I'm sure Kyrie told the Brooklyn Nets that this is what he was going to do. And if Brooklyn had a problem with it, we would have heard something about it, because I don't think it would have gone unspoken, because it's the NBA, and at some point it would have been mentioned, and it wasn't, because they knew what was going on. So the heat that Kyrie Irving has been getting and the villainization of Kyrie Irving throughout this entire process, I think has been too much and just completely unwarranted, not just throughout the entire season, but the playoffs as well. Like, let's just focus on the here and now.
Can I add something here? You're exactly right, because this whole situation in Brooklyn was a huge domino effect from the start of this season. And it's impossible. The media wants to play the blame game. Who was it? Who did it? What was the problem? But really, it was a lot of different problems. It started when Kyrie wasn't able to play due to his personal decision to not get vaccinated. Then James Harden left. KD got hurt. Joe Harris gets hurt. They deal with injuries. Is Steve Nash the head coach? They trade for Ben Simmons, who is an off the court phenomenon itself. It's all these different things that accumulated to this big, huge, hot mess in Brooklyn. And it's impossible to blame Kevin Durant. It's impossible to blame Kyrie Irving. It's impossible to blame just Steve Nash. It was just this huge series of events that led to this huge issue in Brooklyn. But they're certainly going to have to find a way to smoothen it out before next season if they want to actually contend.
Absolutely. I mean, there are obviously things that you have to smooth out, but I think the thing, and I'll be honest with you, I haven't watched an episode of First Take or Get Up or anything like that really, like, since this whole Kyrie thing started, because there's other things to talk about. And one thing that I think really kind of bothered me too, and I exaggerate it, but it's really the truth. Game 3 against the Grizzlies, Karl-Anthony Towns shot 4 times and he had 8 points. The very next night, that got, let's say, the very next morning on all these shows, let's just say, gets a combined 20 minutes of airtime. The rest of that airtime for these 2-3-hour shows is Kyrie Irving. Like, it's like every single thing that the Brooklyn, like every single downfall for the Brooklyn Nets this season has somehow been tied back to Kyrie Irving. And it's like, we're forgetting that KD was hurt with a hamstring. We're forgetting that Joe Harris, one of their best shooters, was out for the season. We're forgetting that Ben Simmons refused to step foot on the basketball court. We're forgetting that maybe Steve Nash really isn't the right guy for this job. We're forgetting that James Harden said, I'm out, and went to go to Philadelphia. Like, there are a lot of different things that go into all this. We're forgetting also in this series as well that for some odd reason, Blake Griffin was held out of game 1 and 2. Like, that was also just swept under the rug. Blake Griffin, especially in game 4, made a lot of critical effort plays down the stretch. Those things were missing that were needed that could have potentially tipped the scales where we wouldn't be recording this episode right now, and this wouldn't be a sweep, because who knows? Maybe Brooklyn does win game 1 at the end of there. Maybe Brooklyn does maybe win game 2. Like, those games were really, really close, and Blake Griffin, for some undisclosed reason, it was listed last night as a coach's decision, was held out of game 1 and 2. Like, that's important. Like, there are a lot of different things. There are a lot of different ingredients into all of this. And to just focus solely on Kyrie Irving is just asinine and really, like I said, unnecessary. Why? Why? He didn't get vaccinated. Let's focus on the here and now. Let's focus on what the Brooklyn Nets can do to potentially win a game. Obviously, they got swept. You mentioned Ben Simmons. I talked about Ben Simmons. Ben Simmons, if there is any season that Ben Simmons probably wants to forget, it's this one, because he holds out in Philly. He ends up getting traded to Brooklyn. Once he gets to Brooklyn, he decides he's going to sue Philadelphia for all the money that he was not given because he sat out. And it's announced then that he's going to play game 4, which was on Monday. And then after the Brooklyn Nets lost game 3, they then said, oh, well, Ben's not going to play in game 4. And then the Nets were apparently exasperated by the Ben Simmons issue. All of this drama around Ben Simmons, and for some reason, all the heat was sent towards Kyrie Irving. But two-part question, what's next for Ben Simmons? And how does Ben Simmons come back into Brooklyn? How does Ben Simmons step foot on an NBA basketball court at all next season, given everything that's transpired over the last 82 games plus the playoffs?
Ben Simmons has cemented himself as the biggest joke in the NBA. It's unbelievable that, one, he went and sued the Philadelphia 76ers for them not giving the money that he didn't earn. He didn't play basketball. Yep. He did not play basketball for them all of last year. So, like you said with Kyrie Irving, there is a punishment for not showing up to work. Ben Simmons doesn't show up to work. He doesn't show up and play basketball, which is what he's paid to do. And listen, I'm not going to sit back here and say he should be on the court or whatever, because I don't know what's going on. But one thing I can say, I'm not an athlete, so I don't like to comment on this kind of stuff. But people who are athletes, people who genuinely know and say this, say that Ben Simmons clearly has no heart. He's clearly capable of playing basketball, and he's not out there on their team. And not only that, they all say if they were teammates with Ben Simmons, they wouldn't even look at him. They wouldn't even look at him if they were doing that while they were on the team. It's insane. It's not like this guy is putting his life on the line or going to war or anything like that. It's going to take an arm and a leg to get you to play basketball. Dude, get on the court, play basketball. It's clear and obvious that Ben Simmons has no heart, heart. He has no competitive spirit whatsoever, not a competitive bone in his body. And it just get on the court, dude. Come on. We're sick of this. We're sick of this. We wouldn't even care as much that you can't shoot. We don't care that you're scared to put the ball in the hoop. You know, we just want you to see you on the court rather than on the sidelines in some goofy outfit.
I think the Ben Simmons thing, I think, is one that's especially interesting, because we talk a lot about Kyrie Irving, and we talk about, you know, your Anthony Davis is with his injuries and people call him street clothes, but it's almost as if, again, it's just really interesting with the double standards. We're so sick of Ben Simmons that we don't want to talk about him, but we're also, for some reason, not sick enough of Kyrie Irving, but all we're going to do, like, it doesn't make sense. This is a guy who has the potential to be an elite NBA superstar. Like, he has the potential to be great. This is a guy who I thought should have been Defensive Player of the Year last year. This is a guy who, if he doesn't fold like a lawn chair last year, the Philadelphia Sixers are probably NBA champions today. Like, the Philadelphia Sixers likely go into that series against Milwaukee. They probably get the job done. They probably go into the Western or the NBA Finals against the Suns, and they get the job done there as well. And the city of Philadelphia is once again hosting the NBA champions, and that's not the case. Ben Simmons forces his way out of Philadelphia. Fine. You force your way out of Philadelphia under the pretenses that you said yourself, once I get out of here, oh, I'll play basketball. I'll be happy. I'll be able to do this, this, this. The second you get out of Philadelphia, there's mental health issues. Now, I myself have suffered from mental health issues in the past. I am not going to cast judgment on whether or not he does or doesn't suffer from mental health issues, because I don't know Ben Simmons and I don't know. But what I will say is, if that's your story, stick to it. You cannot do that and then complain or be confused when you don't get paid for not doing your job. Like, when that's not how it works. Dude, if I don't go to work tomorrow, I can't look at my boss and ask him why I didn't get paid for tomorrow's work. It's because I didn't go to work. I can't sue him for that money I would have earned tomorrow if I don't go to work. I didn't earn that money. So Ben Simmons, he's made it hard, for himself, not just in Brooklyn, but nobody in the league is going to want to play with a guy like this. Like, if Ben Simmons is still on Brooklyn's roster, he better hope and pray that the next season is the best season of his life. Because number one, Brooklyn's probably not going to want to pay him anyway after all of this nonsense. And number two, if he gets cut or if he hits free agency, nobody's going to want to play with this dude. Like, because at this point, this isn't about what you bring to the floor defensively. This isn't about what you potentially bring to the floor as a passer. This isn't about what you bring to the floor as being able to guard the one through the five and be versatile and let an offense flow through you. This isn't even about the fact that you could potentially build around a guy like Ben Simmons, put a whole bunch of shooters around him. You got yourself potentially a championship contending team. This isn't about any of that now. This is about, when you're not playing basketball, this is what you do. That's not good for a locker room. Nobody's going to want to see you in their locker room. Like, the NBA, and we hear it all the time, and it's a cliche, but like the NBA is a brotherhood, and it goes beyond just the guys in your locker room. This is about the other guys on the floor as well, on the other 30 teams or on the other 29 teams from you. Nobody's going to want to play with Ben Simmons, no matter how bad of a rebuild you're in, whether it's the Magic or the Kings or any of these other teams that are in serious, serious rebuilds. Nobody's going to want to pay you. Nobody's going to want to play with you. Ben Simmons' only shot of playing basketball professionally at this point, if he is not on the Brooklyn Nets roster next year, would I be surprised if he is if he takes his butt, finds his passport, and flies to China and goes plays for the Shanghai Sharks. And even then, the guys in Shanghai might not want to play with him because this is really, 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 really bad. So my advice for Ben Simmons is to just retire because I don't think anybody's going to want to play with him. And he can just go play at the Y or at his local rec league because no one's going to pay Ben Simmons to play basketball if this is what's going to happen. If Ben Simmons doesn't want to play basketball, that's not a good look at all.
Well, not only that, one thing we can say about Ben Simmons since he's entered the NBA, loads of potential, right? Oh my gosh, if this guy does this and this, if he does X, Y, and Z, gets better at this, he's going to be a top five player in the league.
Yeah.
He hasn't even remotely gotten better at any of those things.
He hasn't.
He hasn't put in the time or the work to get better at basketball, and now he doesn't even want to play. He doesn't even want to play anymore. And listen, I get it. Mental health is a serious, serious issue. And
absolutely, it
cannot be taken lightly. It absolutely cannot. But when the story changes, so it's his mental health in Philly, that's why he's out. And then all of a sudden he goes to Brooklyn and there's this mysterious back injury that he somehow got from not playing basketball. Like, where did the back injury come from? And now it's a mix of both. What is it? Why are you not on the court? Give us the real explanation here as to why you're not on the court. And I feel like it's not even us. It's not even us as the fans and the media that don't know about the Ben Simmons situation. The problem is the Brooklyn Nets don't know about the Ben Simmons situation. So it's one thing that he's not being transparent to us. It's another thing that he's not being transparent to his teammates and the team that's paying him money to sit on the bench.
Yeah. And that's the thing. And I think, again, like, if I'm not mistaken, we've seen a lot of times, not just in basketball, we see all the time guys say they have mental health issues. You don't see those guys on the bench. You don't see those guys in the building of a basketball game. They're not taking the road trips with the team. They're not sitting on the bench at home watching the team. They're at home getting their lives together. Again, I'm not going to say he is or he isn't, but if that's what you're going to put out there, you have to stick with it. And for me, if Ben Simmons would have just flat out said, I don't want to play basketball this season, I would respect you so much more for that. If you just say, I don't want to play basketball, then for when the Philadelphia Sixers needed you most, you disappeared and then you forced your way out. When the Brooklyn Nets really, really needed you, and this is the thing as well, when KD went down, that would have been the perfect time for Ben Simmons to play basketball because you don't have the pressures of playing alongside KD. You just have to worry about getting your rhythm, getting in basketball shape. Those are the games when you can focus on getting in basketball shape so that when KD comes back to the lineup, when Kyrie eventually comes back to the lineup, then you can start building that chemistry and all that stuff, all that nonsense he was talking about ahead of game three. Now, that's number one. Number two, Peyton, you're not that much older than me, but I don't think we've ever seen in the history of anything, especially with sports that play series, so hockey and baseball and basketball, I don't know we've ever heard of an injury report of a potential return from injury where they say Ben Simmons can return in game 4, 5, or 6. I've never heard of that. Like, because number one, the series may not get to a game 5 or a game 6, as we've seen here, but also, why is there not a target? As I said on my show a couple weeks ago, the reason they did that was so that in the event that they did get swept, which they did, Ben Simmons could come out and say, oh, well, I would have been ready for game 5, but it didn't get there. Like, he's done this consistent thing where he's built in all these excuses. Since being drafted out of LSU by the Philadelphia 76ers, the same guy that was drafted, was at number one overall that year, is the same guy we see today. He hasn't improved anything. Like, his strengths and his weaknesses back then, or his strengths and his weaknesses right now, you could take Ben Simmons from any of his previous years in his career, plug him in right now, you would see no improvement. That's the issue. is you don't want to play basketball. You're complaining about money you don't earn. You're pulling out injuries and all this other stuff. And then you also haven't improved. So your value is really in the toilet. Like, it's all the way in the toilet because you have no worth ethic. You have no work ethic. You're clearly not a team player. You only care about yourself, and you're soft. And regardless of what city you're in, fans want to see you play basketball. Like, it doesn't matter that the Kings suck at that. Like, fans of the Kings go to see De'Aaron Fox play basketball. Fans of the Magic, they want to go see Franz Wagner and Cole Anthony, those guys. They want to see their team play basketball. People in Brooklyn want to see Ben Simmons play basketball, and they want to see him play basketball because Ben Simmons being there could potentially make this team a title contending team, and he's not there. And that's an issue. Kevin Durant, this is Kevin Durant's team. You talked about like management and players kind of intermingling and things. Kevin Durant can just as easily go to the Brooklyn Nets and say, look, get him out of here. The problem, though, is Ben Simmons has no trade value. So at this point, all you can do is cut him. And I'm pretty sure he still has guaranteed money. So you could cut a guy like this and he can still get paid to do nothing, which is apparently what he wants to do, because or else he wouldn't be suing the Philadelphia 76ers. I don't want to spend too much more time left on Ben Simmons because it's raising my blood pressure. The last thing I will say is we've kind of danced around a little bit. If you were the Brooklyn Nets today, because your season's over and you've got all this time before the offseason, obviously the playoffs are going to continue, but you've got a lot of time before the offseason officially starts. What are you thinking about? What are you looking to do for the future as far as maybe potentially getting back to that title contending status or blowing it up? If you're a decision maker in the Brooklyn Nets front office, where's your mind at as far as what's next steps for this ball club?
My mind would be at one, finding a good center, someone who can defend the paint and also someone who can grab the boards and clean the glass, because they got out-rebounded in the series against the Celtics, and the Celtics don't have a clear-cut center that is dominant at all. That's one of their only flaws, really. And even that, they still were bullied on the glass. They were the Brooklyn Nets got bullied in almost every aspect that you could possibly get bullied in an NBA game in all four of these games in the series. Absolutely. And that's what led to them being swept. So I would say get someone who's physical in the paint, can grab rebounds, and then you also need to get some nice wing defenders as well. And also maybe a true point guard, someone who can distribute the ball and get facilitated. Now, maybe that would be Ben Simmons if he played. That situation, we don't know. But let's just say Ben Simmons isn't on the team, because as far as I'm concerned, he hasn't played in a Brooklyn Nets uniform. He's not a Brooklyn Net yet. So they need someone who's going to facilitate the offense, because Kyrie, though he's a point guard, I always thought was better as a two. He doesn't really pass the ball around a lot. And we saw that a lot in this series where the Celtics were very good at facilitating with Marcus Smart. Even though he's not their primary scorer, they need someone like that. I would say a primary ball distributor, wing defenders, and someone who's actually going to be able to be physical on the glass.
I'm just sitting here looking at the upcoming free agents. There's two names that really pop out at me. Obviously, there's this whole thing with his contract, and so we don't know how that's going to be resolved. But if the Suns hold steady and say that they don't want to pay him, DeAndre Ayton is probably going to be the hottest commodity in the free agent department this season. You absolutely, if you're the Brooklyn Nets, if you think that DeAndre Ayton is available, you absolutely go get DeAndre Ayton, because he is physical, he is young, he can get those glass, and he plays really good defensively, and he's a shoe-in for like 22-12 a night, which is helpful as far as taking a little off of KD and Kyrie, but also there aren't really a lot of, outside of Giannis and Embiid, there aren't really a lot of solid bigs that you would have to worry about in the Eastern Conference. Evan Mobley's there now, but he plays the four. As far as a ball handler, you've got just running down some potential names here. You've got Ricky Rubio. I know he got hurt this season, but like Ricky Rubio's maybe an option. That's really the only one. I don't really think you'd want to pay John Wall. You have Patrick Mills, but he's coming off the bench. Like, there's a lot of different things you can do. The big one though is getting Ben Simmons off your payroll, because if he's not going to play basketball, then you there's no reason why you should be paying him. That's just pointless. That's just throwing money down the drain at that point. I feel for the Brooklyn Nets because I thought that they would at least win one of these games. Like I said, like you, I had them winning in seven, but I definitely thought they would be able to win at least one. It's looking like the Celtics are going to be going up against the Bucks in the second round of the playoffs if things hold true in that series. I think the Bucks play tomorrow with their chance to close the series against the Bulls. They're up 3-1 right now. They are without Chris Middleton for at least a month due to his sprained MCL. If things hold true and the Bucks do get past the Bulls in that series, very early predictions on a 7-game series between the Celtics and the Bucks. Who would you have advancing to the Eastern Conference Finals and why?
Are we playing Chris Middleton's healthy the entire series? Or how many games do I have Chris Middleton for?
I think at this point, if the Bucks wrap the series up tomorrow, then Chris Middleton would return game 3 or 4 of the second round series, which is not, which isn't the best recipe for success for the, so we'll play it both ways. We'll say if Chris Middleton's healthy by game 1, and then we'll say if his injury lingers on and he's not available for like game 3 or 4.
Okay. If Middleton's healthy by game 1, by the grace of God, he's healthy by game 1. Then I'm taking the Bucks, because then it becomes a game of, okay, we can't have Giannis just let him do his thing and make the rest of us beat rest of the Bucks beat us, because the rest of the Bucks can beat the Celtics with Chris Middleton and Brooke Lopez and everybody, because Chris Middleton can give you 25. He can give you 30. Mm-hmm. So if he's healthy, I'm picking the Bucks to win in 6. Without Chris Middleton, if he comes back and let's say game 3 or 4, that's going to be tough, because you're going to have to play 2 games on the road in Boston without Chris Middleton. I would take Celtics in 6 in that, because then they can play a style where it's like, we're going to let Giannis do his thing, but he can't beat us. One man can't beat 5 men. Yeah. So they're going to kind of focus on the rest of the Bucks, their role players, and say, don't get hot from 3. Let Giannis do his thing. Let him give him a nice 35 and 14. Whatever he does, because one man can't beat 5 of the Celtics. So
yeah,
Chris Middleton's healthy the whole series. Bucks in 6. Chris Middleton's out to game 3 and 4. Celtics in 6.
I'm going to go the same way. I mean, Chris Middleton's clearly their closer. We've seen what happens when when you're going up against Giannis in a 7-game series and you have enough bodies to throw at him and or throw at your role players. Just look at the 2019 Eastern Conference Finals against the Raptors. Like, just put a wall up in the paint and force them. Now, the one thing I will say is Giannis has gotten better as a shooter. But again, let Giannis drop 35 and 15. Like, that's a small battle as far as winning the war. The war is making it out of the series and getting to the next round. And if letting Giannis average 35 and 15 in a 7-game series, but keeping Bobby Portis at bay and keeping Brooke Lopez from getting hot and keeping Jrue Holiday from making those clutch plays down the stretch means you can win the series, I'm all for it. So I'll go the same way with you. I say if Chris Middleton's healthy by game 1, Bucks in 6. If not, really, if Chris Middleton can't play by game 1, I don't even see how they can get the job done, because this is going to be a road series for the Bucks, and Boston's a really, really, really good team at home. They're also a really good team on the road. So it's going to take perfect basketball on the road for you to get the job done if you're the Bucks. It's going to take A++ basketball when Milwaukee's on the road in Boston to try to steal one of those games. And we saw that with shaky, almost A++ basketball, the Boston Celtics were still able to beat the Nets in game 1. So this is a scrappy, young basketball team with really good defenders all the way around. It's not going to be an easy road for the Bucks, especially if Chris Middleton isn't there from the beginning. But like I said, anything can happen. Maybe the Bulls pull right out of that. They won't. Before we go, very quickly, as we talked about before we went on, you're finally back. So please tell everyone where to find you and what's up next for you.
So you can find me on basically all platforms, on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook. It's at PD Sports. I host my own show, The Peyton Doyle Show. It's live on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter every Wednesday at 10 a.m. So tune into that. And if you can't, I do post an audio version on Apple Podcasts and Spotify for everyone to listen to. And I do upload the show afterwards to YouTube as well for everyone to rewatch and listen to and whatever. So yeah, I mean, it feels really good to be back. Last week was my first show in 341 days. Before that, you could really only catch me on This Justin with Justin Marville and all them guys over there. That was really the only thing I did. I would go on that about like once every 3 months, but now I'm back and I'm here with Marcus today. And yeah, it's just great to be back.
It's great to have you back, and it was a damn good first show back. If you haven't watched it or listened to it, please listen to it. As far as me, as you can see, I kind of upgraded the thing a little bit, so now all the stuff is at the bottom, so you can see there. You can follow on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at GTPMarcus. We are available on Spotify, Apple Podcast, and iHeartRadio as well. Thank you guys for watching. Thank you guys for listening. Three things before we go. Number one, please, 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 my birthday is coming up. I would love it if by my birthday we can get to 100 subscribers on YouTube, so please make sure you smash that subscribe button. Also, a very important person of mine, person to me, one of my mentors, her name is Miss Jessica Brown. She's the president, CEO, founder. She's got like 50 different hats. She has a foundation. It's called the College Girl Foundation, girl with a U, not an I. They are having their annual scholarship luncheon June 2nd, 2022, I believe it is, or maybe it's June 4th. I get the date mixed up. I should probably learn it because I'm doing an ad for it, but whatever. Whatever it is, you can go on Instagram and on Facebook or on the website, College Girl Foundation. That's again, girl with a U, not an I, to donate or buy a ticket. It's a really solid foundation helping kids in the DMV area, specifically DC and Maryland, but really DC, get to college with scholarships and financial aid help and things of that sort. So that's really solid. And then also one of my good friends, Barry Dita Connell, he has his own fashion line. It's called Connell Junior Couture, C-O-N-N-E-L-L, Junior Couture, C-O-U-T-U-R-E. You can follow him on Instagram and TikTok as well and go to his website to buy his cool stuff. And Lenny, a friend of the show, he has a song out on all digital streaming platforms called Glow, G-O-L-W, exclamation point. The artist is Linwood, L, exclamation point, N-W-O-O-D. Please stream it. That was a lot. I'm going to include it all in the description, and I'll post about it on all my socials. Thank you, Peyton, for sitting through that. So again, for Peyton Doyle of the Peyton Doyle Show, this is Marcus of Goat Talk with Marcus signing off. Thank you guys for watching and listening, and as always, you guys enjoy the rest of your lives.